This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox in for Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, the war on terror heats up this week as President Bush runs into a roadblock on Capitol Hill in his bid to gain support for broader anti-terrorism legislation. We'll look at what happened. And it was billed as a social experiment on TV, pitting one race against another. Just what did happen on CBS's Survivor premiere last night? Joining us today from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., Joe Davidson, an editor at The Washington Post. Hey, Joe.
Good morning, Tony.
At member station WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island, Glenn Lowry, professor of the social sciences and professor of economics at Brown University. Glenn, nice to have you back. We missed you last week. Hope you're feeling better.
I am. Thank you, Tony.
And Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, who is at WMRA in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Mary, welcome to you as well.
Tony, in fact, I'm at the Woodrow Wilson Presidential Library at a symposium on Wilson and race, which is an interesting topic itself.
Well, we'll try to get to that before we're done. Before we get into the main events of the day, the events on Capitol Hill, obviously, and related developments surrounding the war in Iraq this week, let me just briefly, if you indulge you, and ask you to follow up with me on the issue of charter schools, as we just heard a moment ago. Now, the teachers union, for one, they're squarely against these schools partly because the schools are non-union and also because they claim the charters undercut the ability of the public schools to do their jobs, which is teaching effectively. Again, briefly, let me ask you, starting with you, Mary, what should concerned parents do?
What parents should do is realize that the charter school movement, all these reform movements, are an attempt to bypass fixing all these problems in the public schools, to bypass the unions, to bypass the resource question, to bypass the accountability questions. We're always coming up with some new idea that we think is going to be magic. Most schools in this country aren't failing, and the ones that are, which disproportionately African Americans attend, some of the charters work, some have no accountability. There are stories of corruption of all various kinds involved, and others, but parents feel good about them because it feels like they're doing something for their kids. If you're going to send your kid to a charter school or to a public school, wherever you're sending them, you ought to very carefully examine what that school is doing and not think, oh, boy, they wear a uniform or they go to this school and it seems to be orderly and they end up with no achievement.
I don't have school-age kids, charter school-age children, and I don't know whether Joe, you or Glenn do or not, but what's your take, Glenn, on these schools?
Well, you know, I agree with what Mary Berry was just saying in the main, because there are deep structural problems that are going to require more mobilization, more resources, and more public engagement and the reformation of education for disadvantaged children than the experimental things like charter schools can allow. But I've got grandchildren in Chicago, and my daughter, their mother, facing the problem of how to get her children educated, is desperate for alternatives to public schools, which often are not working, and so had found a charter school that was working for her and her children, and I was very grateful that the school was there for her. So I'm trying to say two things at once. The politics of it, basically, I agree with Mary Frances Berry. We need to put a lot more of ourselves into doing something about education for disadvantaged children than looking for gimmicks. On the other hand, hard-pressed parents are often deeply relieved to be able to turn to a charter school that works. Not all of them do.
Yes, true. Joe, is this something that works out of desperation?
I think that the extent to which the charter school works is really an individual school issue. I think that, as my colleagues have indicated, you just can't say that a charter school is better than a public school because it's outside of the public school system, the traditional public school system. Certainly here in Washington, D.C., we have a KIPP Academy, which is very highly rated, and the public schools are very poorly rated. We recently had a story that said about 80% of the schools here don't meet academic benchmarks, the standards by which the schools are now held. But the story also indicated that only a small number of the charter schools will meet those same benchmarks. So I think you do have to look at the schools very closely. And I think in the end, we as a society will really have to put a lot of effort into improving the public school system where the vast majority of our students continue to be educated.
All right. Thanks for your input on that. Let's move on to the Beltway. Inside the Beltway, the president got hijacked, so to speak, this week in the case of his war on terror. President Bush took his case to Capitol Hill, seeking more support for the war, and specifically changes in the laws regarding treatment and interrogation of prisoners. Now, here's what he had to say after meeting with legislators.
I reminded them that the most important job of government is to protect the homeland. And yesterday, they advanced an important piece of legislation to do just that. I'll continue to work with members of the Congress to get the good legislation so we can do our duty.
Well, of course, here's what happened. The Senate Armed Services Committee believes it did its duty, just not what the president wanted, and approved an alternative, one that the president has indicated he'll fight. So, Joe, let me start with you. Is this a fight the president can win?
Well, right now, I think he's going to have a very tough fight on his hands. And right now, it looks like he certainly might not win it. The final bell has not rung. But when you have somebody like John McCain, the senator from Arizona, and crucially in this particular instance, a former prisoner of war during the Vietnam War, opposing the president's legislation and advancing his own and getting other moderate Republicans to join him, then you're up against a very tough fight as the vote in the Senate Armed Services Committee yesterday demonstrated. That vote went against the president's plan. And among those moderates, by the way, are somebody who's not a senator but a former Secretary of State, Colin Powell, who wrote a letter to Senator McCain endorsing the
That's
McCain
right.
legislation. And the crucial sentence there is, the world is beginning to doubt the moral basis of our fight against terrorism. That's pretty strong language for a former Bush appointee.
Yeah, and the language that he didn't use when he was in office, isn't it? Isn't that right, Glenn? He sort of stepped out now in a way that he hadn't stepped out before.
Yeah. I guess this is not a segment on Colin Powell, but I agree with that. Much could be said about that. But, you know, there's an election coming. The war in Iraq and the failure in Iraq is a deep burden for Republican candidates. And finally, we're getting some congressional oversight and pushback from even Republican senators and congressmen and women who have some doubts about what the president is doing. And Colin Powell's point that the world is losing confidence in our moral leadership is a deep and profound point. Secret prisons. Extraordinary
rendition. And an obvious
rendition.
One, too, Glenn.
Guantanamo, you know.
Well, you know, but Mary, the president has been in this position before when it seemed that he could be counted out. And in the end, at the end of the day, he manages to prevail. What prevents him from doing that again?
Here's what I think. McCain and Graham, who both have military experience, are acting on conscience and for the best interests of our troops in the long run, not just in the short run, so that if they're captured by somebody, they'll be protected. So they're right on the substance. Whether they can hold out on the politics of it will depend on a lot of things. It'll depend on whether Bush's approval ratings go up so that he's seen as an asset rather than a liability going into the next election. It'll depend on how much the conservative base leans on McCain, who's running for president, to get on board, and whether he then resolves his doubts in terms of his conscience. So it will depend on polls. It will depend on calculations, what the president promises them. A president can always promise you nominees of judges in your states and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I would say, looking at it now, since Warner is stepping down as chair, this is the end of his service as chair, and McCain is running for president, and the polls now go the other way, I think that the president has a good shot at losing this one.
Let me ask you, the three of you, if you remember this. I know I'm aging myself a little bit, but there's an old song called "Where Have All the Flowers Gone?" You remember that song?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
So here's
yeah.
my question. Where have all the allies gone? I mean, Tony Blair this week went on the defense to back the president against his European critics who were talking about mad anti-Americanism. Kofi Annan talked about on his trip through the Mideast how disastrous the situation has been. And despite Blair's pronouncements, the latest national poll in his own country shows 53% believe the government was losing the war, and get this, 56% thought the war was being lost by, quote, other governments, namely us. So how shaky, Joe, is the coalition that went to Iraq initially?
Well, the allies haven't gone anywhere. They're where they always have been, and that's in opposition to the policies of Washington as it relates to the war in Iraq, certainly, not to the larger war on terror, which includes you know, the invasion of Afghanistan, in which you really had a lot of Allied support. But the British people never supported Tony Blair's decision to join President Bush. The leaders of the Middle East countries, the Arab countries that are friendly to the United States, such as Egypt, they warned against the United States going to war against Iraq. So the Allies are simply where they have been, which is against the U.S. policy in Iraq.
But they seem to be more vocal. Is that right, Glenn? Maybe not.
Well, I don't know, but, you know, Tony Blair rolled the dice and he lost. He bet with Bush on the Iraq move. It was a very bad move. You read these books that are coming out now about all the machinations that went on as we were going into Iraq, and a lot of people inside the U.S. government and a lot of people in foreign embassies were saying, there is no plan. What's going to happen after you pull Saddam? What's going to happen to that country, and what are the implications for the region? Now the chickens have come home to roost, and we're seeing the political fallout both here in the United States and in England.
Now, Mary, the president got a little bump in his... A Wall Street Journal said the president got a little bump in his popularity, still below 50%. What are we to make of this? We're talking about international reaction to the war and how the allies were against it and continue to be. What about the American public, and how will that shake out with regard to the elections turnout?
Two things. If you're president, any president, you can take advantage of the bully pulpit. And 9/11 and all those speeches around it and everything and connecting with terror, we already knew that there were like 37% of the American people who still thought there was WMD. So, you know, there was a bump. I don't think the bump will hold unless he comes up with some other connection to the war on terror. But both the Allied, international, and here in this country, the problem is that the judgments that the administration made turned out all to be wrong. They were told by people like Scowcroft and others here in this country, a former old first Bush advisor, that if you take the lid off in Iraq, you're going to create a mess. We've got order there. They're not bothering us. Leave those people alone. And now we have this civil war. We have all these people getting killed, including American troops, and nobody knows what to do, and we're stuck on the flypaper, and the international allies feel like the whole region is in chaos. Afghanistan is going down the tubes again and has finally made the news going down the tubes. And in this country, the discontent that people have when they see every day people getting killed, whether it's death squads in Iraq or American soldiers yesterday getting killed, people say we're stuck, we're in, we can't get out, and who got us in here? Bush. But I think that the anti-Americanism around the world will last only so long as Bush is there. It's not that people hate Americans so much. What they hate is the administration and what it's doing.
Or the policies.
Yeah.
All right, let's switch reels to something that has really no social... Well, let me not put an opinion on this because, you know, some people really think this stuff is important. I had never watched Survivor, I'll be honest, until last night. And I watched it specifically because of all of this this hype about the race teams. And I found it actually fascinating. Now, did the three of you get a chance to watch it?
Well,
I
was talking about Wilson and race, so I didn't get to see it.
You didn't get to see it.
But I can talk about it anyway.
Let me just break it down for you really, really quickly for those who didn't get to see it. You've got a white team, an Asian team, a Latino team, and a black team. And what ended up happening was, and they're competing against each other, the black team came in last. There was a breakdown of communication between the three black women and the two black men, and the three black women voted one of the black men off, and the black team got mad at the white team because the white team stole a chicken from the Asian team, and the black team voted to send the white team into exile, one of those guys.
Could you repeat that, please?
The bottom line of it, it seemed to be that the dysfunction that we see sometimes all around us continued in a very dramatic way on the show. And anyone who did see it, any of you who actually did see it, were you troubled by anything that you saw?
I guess the silence means
nobody saw it.
No, we didn't see it.
Oh, man. All right.
I can tell you what my overall reaction was to the idea of the show, and what you've just said reinforces my reaction, which is that First of all, the show is representative of the actual racial division and segregation that exists in much of our society. Mm-hmm. There are people in racial groups, whether it's in housing or whether it's employment. And also the intra-race dissension where, you know, in the black community we have gender differences, class differences and the like, to see how those would play out once you group people. But the overall message, which is that people are already in racial and ethnic groups to begin with, and the producers taking advantage of that, hoping that they will get people to watch the show, and I'd be interested to see whether the ratings went up or not.
That would be
I can understand why they're doing it.
Another point is that it contrasts pretty distinctly with a lot of the commercials we see on television, where you see these happy groups of integrated mm-hmm. people, usually one black person and maybe three or four or five white people, just, you know, running through the surf or something. I mean, you know, it's like the commercials have this idealistic view of America, which in fact is not the reality.
Well, I will tell you,
I think that's very good, because what I was going to say is I was teaching my students here at Brown University yesterday in a course on prisons, and we're looking at the L.A. County Jail, which is nothing but a survivor situation
right,
with a bunch
sure.
of racially defined teams. They call them gangs dealing with each other. The Asians in the L.A. County Jail are all on one tier away from the other gangs
right.
because they're green-lighted. And it's open season on Asians in the L.A. County Jail. So you're not kidding, Joe Davidson. The real world is a lot more structured than that television show is along racial lines in certain situations.
You're absolutely correct. And to be honest with you, I don't intend to go back and look at it again. I did it because I was curious. But I will tell you this one scene, and we got to get out of here. And that is, they had this black guy who was ostensibly the leader. And the first thing he did was he went on break, and they showed him laying down on the beach, and he said, "I got to have a break." Now, that's a stereotype if I ever saw one. Joe Davidson, Mary Frances Berry, Glenn Lowry, thank you all very much for
all right,
a very enlightening Reporters Roundtable. We'll see you later.